Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Hello there, little ones. You see your old man dressed up as Santa Claus and can't get his belly through the fireplace? And you hang up a purple bulb on a tree and 3,000 volts go through you? And your brother made an animal cage out of your Erector set and Grandma can't get out? And someone opened a window while you're sorting stamps and all your triangles are flying around the house? And one of your gifts, a strange little shiny box, suddenly takes off and is now circling the earth at 1,200 miles an hour? Is that what's troubling you, tiny tots?
Well, put your head down low and take a run in the snow with that devil-may-care Christmas spirit. Put our whole world singing that happy song, merrily we roll along. You'll never give up, never give up, never give up. That sled!
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine will. Good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Now here's the man who's redefining green, which means that he's busy working on the Wikipedia entry, Mike Novak.
One more time.
Looky here. I got something, just checked the mail, and got something from the Horrigans who were here the other week. Urban Lumber. Let's see. Let me go back. Now I got to go back to the site to make sure I pass shows. See, that's how I find out. Remember everything I've done on the show. I just go to past shows. There it is. Horrigan Urban Forest Products, Inc. And as you remember, Bruce and Erica were on the show on the 22nd, and they had all their wood products they brought in. And the thing that I thought was the coolest was this little card holder for your business cards that they made out of reused urban lumber. And they sent me one of them.
It's nice.
It's and a little card that you plant. Now, I don't know if this one has seeds in it.
No,
maybe
I don't know.
I don't think it does. I think it's just a recycled. Thank you for having us on your show. Enclosed is one of the ash card holders made by Matt Seiler. Emma's Woodcraft. Okay. Enjoy the holiday season. Best regards, Erica and Bruce. So, this is awesome. And here it is. It was really nice of them to send me this. And it is the neatest little holder, and it's a lovely little design. And you put your business cards in there. And
that's recycled from, like, a parkway tree that was cut down for whatever reason.
And yeah, one is from an ash tree that may or may not have been done in by Emerald Ash Borer.
Who knows?
Yeah. Welcome, y'all. And we were out last night, both of us here, Heather and a bunch of people from WCPT. Did you have a good time?
I had a wonderful time.
You were running around like crazy.
I worked my tail off. I did.
She was on the job, and I was just hanging out. I got to tell you something. That, by the way, we were at the Unity Temple in Oak Park. Stephanie Miller and Bill Press were there, and Dick Kay was there, and the Oy Vey guys were there. Ron Cowgill was there.
Everybody was. Everybody who I love and adore was there, so Mike, I was pleased.
Mike Sanders was there. Fred was there. Who else?
Carl was there. Charlie was there, and the rest of the higher-ups were there. The sales staff was there.
You don't mention the sales staff, but that's their job to show up.
Yeah, true.
They're supposed to be there. They're just there to schmooze anyway. So, but when you get your actual radio personalities there, then you mention their names. Okay. Sales staff was there.
They were there.
And Steph and Bill spoke, and I think at some point, I haven't seen yet, but at some point there will be a picture or two up on my website of me with Bill Press and Stephanie Miller. And, you know, Stephanie, this is very funny, she said to me, honest to God, she said, "That's a nice jacket." And then she said, after you took the picture, she said, "Now get away from me." Very politely, but she said, nice jacket, but... get out of here.
Yeah, I helped elbow her to the front door to get her into her car and gone after it was all said and done.
So we all had a great time. Thank you to all the people who showed up. Man, it was packed.
There was an available seat. And then to the folks at Unity Temple, they were amazing. They were very gracious. They were wonderful hosts. And I thank them for having us, too.
Yeah. And I'd never been in there. It's a fabulous place. They say that during the day, when it's naturally lighted, but at night it was odd because up in the main area where Harvey was standing, there was no light. So
right.
So and we didn't mention Harvey was there too.
Yeah,
of course.
The GM.
Yeah,
he kind of had a hand in things.
He got his props last night. He got him
a lot. They were talking about him all the time.
He got to make his speeches, and they all patted him on the back. Yeah, great guy.
He did good.
So, it was interesting that there was no light up there. But during the day, I guess it's very... but the structure itself is beautiful. And the other person I got to give props to, Joey Morelli from...
Joey's Brick House.
Joey's Brick House. That pasta thing.
The cheesy noodles.
Cheesy noodles, that's what he called it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was good.
It was really good.
That was really good.
They had some cheesy noodles. Family Values of the Noy Vey, you know, they're run... Joey's Brick House in the city, wonderful establishment. They came, they brought all the food, beer, wine. They wined and dined us something fantastic. And yeah, Joey was cooking right there in the...
I know, that was the thing. They were working.
Yeah, they were. I was so... And I've got pictures of him with the noodles, like, kind of flipping in the pan. And, yeah, they turned out really great.
So we'll get some of those photos up. I'm sure that Kathleen's working on it. Even as we speak, and she'll get some... Or maybe not. Maybe she's just sleeping, too. So... that will be up on the website shortly. All right, we need to get some business out of the way. Let's give our first guest a call, and we will be talking at the beginning here about, you know, speaking of wining and dining, new experience in the West Loop, and that has some green elements as well. Some of you may have seen the new Chicago French Market. The French Market, you know, and I hope I don't slip into my really bad French accent. But we'll talk about that in the first hour. Rick DeMaio is back, and we're happy to have him. I was looking at his forecast. He will be here at 8:30, and I'm looking Wednesday, and one little line here: overnight models continue to indicate 6 to 12 inches of snow possible Wednesday. Yeah, isn't that fun? Winter is on its way. And we'll ask him about that. Second hour, get your tree questions ready, because we have the guys from the Care Trees. Sean King Zed, a buddy of mine who's been on my shows many, many times, and Tom Kroc, and he is a lighting expert. And they're going to give you the do's and don'ts of throwing Christmas lights on a tree and what to do for the winter. We have another guest there, too. Yes. So let's get them both on. And they will do that after 9 o'clock, and we'll just sit around and talk about trees. So all your questions are welcome at 773-838-WCPT at that time. You can call now, too, because I am going on the line even as we speak. to talk to Bob Wislow. How you doing, Bob?
Great. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning to you. Bob is the CEO and chairman of U.S. Equities. And according to this, that I have in front of me, Bob, you're the co-developer of the Chicago French market. What does it mean to be the co-developer of the Chicago French market?
Mike, our company is the developer of a project called Metromarket, and the Chicago French market is really the major key tenant in the Metromarket development. And as in that role, we have co-developed the market with the Benzedun family. The Benzedun family is the largest operator of markets in Paris, and they have 13 summer markets, farmer-type markets, around the Chicagoland area. We wanted a market to be the key to our metro market development, went out to find the best market managers we could, and then we're a 50-50 partner with them in that project.
I got a lot of questions about this. Now, it opened on Thursday, I talked to other people. It's going to take a little time to get the word out, I'm sure, but you're in a great location, and the whole point of this, as I mentioned earlier, is to be sustainable or as sustainable as you can. You're part of a strategy called Transit-Oriented Development, or TOD, which is going up in other places. Have you worked on TOD strategies before?
Actually, our company has, throughout its history, done a lot of transit-oriented development work. We did the renovation at Chicago Union Station and created the retail spaces there, must be 20 years ago.
Okay.
We did the LaSalle Street Station project here in Chicago, where we created the financial complex, which is the Chicago Board Options Exchange, the Chicago Stock Exchange, and one financial place. We did the repositioning of 30th Street Station in Philadelphia, which created a market in that building, which is both an Amtrak and a commuter station. We're currently doing the Suburban Station in downtown Philadelphia, which is a major commuter station. So we've done actually quite a bit of transit-oriented development work.
And by the way, that's Bob Wislow, CEO and Chairman of U.S. Equities. We are talking about the opening of the Chicago French market at the Ogilvie Transportation Center. Now, I've talked to a couple of people. In fact, I've responded this way when I told them about it, and they said, well, where is this? I mean, you're reusing a 100-year-old building there, and everybody's saying, I can't picture it in my head. Why is that, Bob?
You know, it's very interesting. People, this building is one of those things that's been there so long it's just gone away. Like a piece of art that you have in your house and haven't moved in 20 years.
Yeah.
No one notices it anymore.
Well,
this building is a building that runs from Madison Street to Washington to Randolph to Lake. And what it is it is really the structure, the building itself, is the structure that holds up the Metro commuter line that comes in overhead into the Citicorp building. And this 100-year-old building, this two blocks of brick building, really a beautiful structure, big, large, arching windows, has been nothing but a storage area for equipment, cars, track maintenance items for the Union Pacific Railroad for clearly 100 years. And it really became like a Chinese wall between the Loop and the West Loop. You could go under the viaducts, Washington Street and Randolph Street and Lake Street, with your car or walking through, but there's no way to penetrate through the building. And what we've done is opened that building up and allowed really all of the business, whether it's office workers, whether it's residents walking back and forth to work, to be able to walk through this block and penetrate the block and open it up as retail.
I'm glad you explained it that way, because it was kind of the Great Wall of China separating the west part from the east part, and a lot of us, as you said, have driven through it, like coming east on Washington through that tunnel and going through and saying, gosh, I wish this tunnel weren't here, because, you know, it's blocking out my radio reception. And but that is the area, and it's old. This old brick building that is now about to be transformed. And let me tell you, Bob, you've already got one rave review. Let's go to line three, and a guy who calls this show all the time, Amtrak Tim. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing great, doing great. I had a chance to actually go down to the French Market there below the Chicago Northwest Station, not Union Pacific, but and well, it's Union Pacific now. It's awesome. I had a chance to go down there, buy some cookies. Actually, I think I bought lunch down there. They've got some nice soups that are pre-made for commuters to pick up and take to the office. And it's kind of cool having hearing the trains rolling overhead. But having train station development, I think is a really great idea as we start to get high speed or higher speed trains in this country. More and more people are going to be migrating back to their stations, and a lot of these stations are beautiful old buildings that have been let to kind of deteriorate.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you talked earlier, Bob, about Union Station. And one of the great fears of my existence here in Chicago is that someday they're going to try to tear that thing down. It's just they don't make them like that anymore.
I mean, if any community that's that loses its station will in its place get the equivalent of an AmShack.
AmShack.
That was well stated.
Well, as an example, poor old. Omaha, Nebraska, has a beautiful old station. They just sold off to a developer, who eventually the development fell through. So it's in limbo as like a little museum, and the commuters, about a block away, have to get on and off the train in this little metal shack, which is equivalent, not even as good as what you have at metro stations.
Unbelievable, and they do that, and you see these all over. I can get into the whole train thing. You should know, Bob, that Tim and I talk about trains all the time, and we're both fans of Amtrak and train travel. And having ridden on the Amtrak throughout the country, one of the things you discover is that there are many of these old stations in usually medium-sized towns throughout the country, and often they've been abandoned or only parts of them are used. I mean, a classic example, Detroit, which I think the thing has been kind of abandoned.
The other big problem with Amtrak travel, which is slowly getting rectified, is you want to go somewhere, that's fine. You go somewhere, you get off the train, and then you're stuck.
Well, yeah, that was the other point I was going to make. You want to see the you know, not the soft underbelly, but the rusted underbelly of America. You ride a train.
Oh yeah,
because it goes by every junkyard in the country, which is a shame. Because, I mean, this is where the country grew up and we industrialized, and now it's all been left just as a reminder of our former glory. Our manufacturing glory, and it's kind of sad. But you're right about that too, Bob, that sometimes you do get left. And that's what Tim and I are interested in having change in the country, right, Tim?
Absolutely, 100%.
So,
I think that's one of the things transit-oriented development can do for you, Mike.
What's that?
I think that's one of the things transit-oriented development can do.
Exactly. That's what we're talking about, and hoping that Tim. So you give it a thumbs up, the Chicago French Market.
Oh yes, 100%.
All right.
Thank you, Tim.
Right, bye bye.
Thanks for calling. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're talking to Bob Wislow of U.S. Equities, who helped put the Metro Market together. And part of that development is the Chicago French Market, adjacent to the Ogilvie Transportation Center. Again, you got to go and experience it yourself if you want to know exactly where that is. All the information is up on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. And you can find the links, and better yet, you should go there. And I think this is a good time, Bob, to bring in Dimitri Fayard. How you doing, Dimitri?
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. And he's the co-proprietor of Vanille Patisserie.
Yes.
And did I come close to saying that correctly?
Yes, you do.
You're one of the merchants there, and are one of 30 merchants at the Chicago French Market. How have the first 3 days gone?
It's been really, really busy. I mean, we had a great response from commuters, and Saturday we had a lot of local residents who came and did all of their shopping, so it's been great.
And you point that out, Dimitri and Bob. That is one of the other things you're trying to do. In addition to get people to come in via rails because they have to get downtown to work, you're also trying to get walk-in traffic, I imagine, from the area.
Well, really, we were looking at four markets when we did this development, Mike. Of course, there's the commuters, which we service directly. And that's a wonderful market in the morning and again in the evening. And, of course, some of those commuters see what you've done and, you know, come back at lunchtime. Our really main market is the residents that live in the area. Within a half-mile walking distance, we have 41,000 residents. And this has really been a retail desert for those residents that have moved in that area. You know, there are some places to shop on the far west side, or you can come into downtown, but there's been very little retail development that has occurred in the heart of this wonderful West Loop residential area. Then in addition to the residents within a half-mile walking radius, we have 500,000 office workers who are looking for a place to go, not just for lunch, but a place to be able to pick up their food and pick up produce, pick up meat and pick up fish and, you know, either jump on their bike or jump in their car or jump on the train on the way home. And then lastly, because of its convenient location, it's downtown, it's on Metra, it's easy to get to. We believe that this is a destination market for people who are outside of the walking radius as a shopping and retail and interesting destination, as well as a tourist stop.
Dimitri, what do you sell in your establishment?
We are doing mostly sweets, so anything from French bakeries, croissants, any kind of cakes, chocolates, candies.
And this is not your pastry in cellophane, okay? This is something that is going to be gourmet caliber because Dimitri Fayard, and do I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Is the World Pastry Champion of 2008. Now, where did you win that award?
It was in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville?
Yeah.
Now that's incongruent for me. I can't imagine
having. I
don't
think Nashville is a big pastry hub, but, in my mind.
No.
I heard that things in the first 3 days of the market were just fabulous, and as you said, Dimitri, it was quite busy. Did you run out of any of your stuff?
We did. We had to make about 6 deliveries every day, but you know, it's that's what we came here for. You know, it's. We are very excited to be here, and the goal was to try and please as many people as we could. So, you know, we had to work really hard for the past 3 days and make it happen.
Well, that's what you want. You don't want to have too few people. You want to have too many people, and that's a problem that anybody can deal with in business. Right, Bob?
Well, our first day it was a big problem because we believe we had over 8,000 people who visited the market the first day in the Grand
Opening. Yikes.
So it was a real press. But that's because, you know, we had the opening day and the mayor and Alderman Riley were there and Carol Doris, the chairman of Metro, along with Phil Pagano. So it was a very big crowd. But the crowds just continued. It continued through Friday and then Saturday. Each day there were people waiting at the door as we opened for the market to open. And people were there right till the end, till the closing. Just a constant flow of people coming and enjoying it, and, you know, buying, you know, every item of food that they may need, whether it was you know, food to take home and to cook with, or a snack at the market, or a prepared meal to take with them somewhere else.
Thank you.
I'm not sure who's sneezing over there, but it's part of Sunday morning. You have a lot of different kinds of food. There's some certified organic. You've got artisans there who are selling their goods. You have flowers. It's basically a European-styled setup. And Bob, was there any market in particular that you modeled this after?
Really, we modeled it after the European markets. One of my favorite things is whenever I'm in any city that has a market is to be there as the market opens at the crack of dawn and see the market, whether it's a full market or a fish market or a flower market. I just love markets and always wanted to bring one here. And when we found the Benzedun family and the wonderful markets they do both covered markets as well as outdoor markets throughout Paris. They have 97 markets. They have 10,000 vendors who are at their markets in Paris. We knew we found the right people to bring that very European market idea to Chicago.
Now, how is this different from other markets in Chicago? I know it's open year-round. I will take issue with it not being open on Sunday at the moment. I'll bet you could probably, from the response of the first 3 days, keep it going on Sunday. I mean, I'm a fan of Pike Place Market in Seattle. I can't imagine that place not being open on a Sunday.
Well, you know, we had to see what we had before we opened, and I'm sure Dimitri right now is enjoying his Sunday because he looked absolutely exhausted when I left there on Saturday.
Dimitri, what are you doing today?
I'm trying to rest today.
You're right, Bob.
but we did tell all the vendors in the license agreement that, you know, if the demand is there and the majority of vendors want to be open on Sunday, we will be open on Sunday. So that is something that's a possibility in the future. But we felt we would get started in this way. And you are right, Mike. You know, Sunday may be a wonderful day to serve the neighborhood.
I got a feeling that you're going to expand that a lot sooner than you thought. It just sounds like, and I meant to get there, and I had three very hectic days and was not able to get over to the market. But I'm going to get there this week and do a tour myself and see what's going on. It just sounds fabulous.
Bring some pastry back.
Yeah, I'll bring some pastry.
Oh, please.
Back.
Well,
yeah.
the acceptance by the community has been just beyond our wildest expectations. You know, we thought, you know, opening day would be fine, but then, you know, Friday, Saturday, we'd start to build our business slowly over a period of time. You know, our vendors just couldn't keep up. Some of our vendors who have one other or two other locations and have had them for a while have gone beyond the best day they've ever had in those other locations, in this location already. So you may be right, Mike. We may have to expand earlier than thought. But what we first want to do is make sure we're serving the community in the way they want. So we're looking for any ideas and suggestions people may have. Ways to expand our service. It's very interesting. Our fish and meat vendor, City Fresh Markets, has already had people calling in, asking if they can, telling what order what they'd like, and asking if it can be packaged and ready as they come by on their walking on their way home, or walking to the train. So they've added a fax service, so that or adding it this week.
That makes sense.
So that people can just fax their orders in and have it ready to go, and they especially wrap their fish with some dry
ice
and a double layer of wrapping so that you can carry your fish home perfectly and not bother the person next to you on the train.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. If you're going to be carrying fish on the train, better make sure that sucker's wrapped.
Yeah, no, they have it all figured
out. No pun intended.
So, and you know, the wonderful thing you ask about the difference between this market and other markets here in the city.
I mean, because we do have a year-round market down at Peggy Notabart and, you know, the Chicago Green Market. And how is this different?
Well, from the Chicago Green Market, you know, we look at this as a complement. That is a model that is somewhat similar to ours, although it's on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and now it's in the winter as well. You know, our winter, we're full-time, so we're there 6 days a week, and as you said, maybe someday we'll be seven. We're covered, so in the summer, whether it's rain or shine or snow, we're open all the time so people know that we're already there, but we're a complement to that type of market.
Yeah.
We are different than everybody else in the city, I would say, that we're a collection of 30 individual entrepreneurs. These are small entrepreneurial operations. The owners are running them. It's people who really know about their food. They care. It's people who are true entrepreneurs. They're not really, it's not the financial gain that's the first thing for these people. It's being able to do what they love to do and what they do really well and to build long-term relationships with a happy client base and to have those interactions across the counter and tell people how to best prepare their food and how they've made what they make and build those relationships, that old type of marketplace.
Are you going to try to get the same kind of locally grown produce that Chicago Green City Market has and that sort of thing, and the other farmers markets around the city?
Absolutely. During the season, actually we're going for local in everything we can. It's like Dimitri is a wonderful local operation. Everybody.
I don't
there.
Know. Dimitri doesn't sound like he's from these parts. Is that a Southside French accent there, Dimitri?
A little more.
A little what? I'm sorry?
A little more east.
A little more east. Okay.
But Dimitri has a business here in Chicago in the Lincoln Park area, and now he has our business here, and that's what we've gone to find is. Yes, we have, people from all over the world who have shops here with us. People from all over Chicago as well. But these are they're really entrepreneurial people. People with a spirit of serving their customers and client base, where they want to know these people.
Well, it sure sounds like it's a great start and a welcome addition to retail in Chicago. So, Dimitri, thank you so much for talking to me this morning. I'm going to see if I can find you when I stop by this week.
Definitely.
And test out a pastry, all right?
Thank you.
All right, I'll talk to you later. And, Bob, you and I have more talking to do because I see that you've had some things to do with the planters on Michigan Avenue and Chihuly over at the Garfield Park Conservatory. These are all things that, of course, I find interesting. We don't have the time at the moment, but perhaps we should visit again and talk about this kind of thing.
Well, I'd love to, Mike. And if you do come by the market, let us know or Sebastian Benzedun, and we'll give you a tour and introduce you to the individual vendors so you can hear their story. And if you look at our website, which is www.frenchmarketchicago.com, you can see the story and history and background of each of our individual vendors, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, let me remark again that all this information, the links are there on my website, which is mikenowak.net, MikeNowak.net. Go to this week's show. The links to the Chicago French Market as well as the Metro Market, so you can see the overall development for that area. The various, there's links to, if you go to those sites, to the various shops that are there and what you can expect when you go over to the transportation center. Bob Wislow, thank you so much. We will talk soon, I hope.
Thank you, Mike. Hope we see you at the market soon.
Have a great Sunday.
You too.
This is the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk. Rick DeMaio Weather is next. He's back. He's in the building. He's live. We'll have a local forecast, and Heather may be the happiest person in the room. What?
I've never missed a meteorologist so much in my life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll give Rick the full story on that. It's the holiday season, and let's check off the list. Gifts, home and party decor, poinsettias, where to go? Why not shop at a place that specializes in things like gifts, home, party decor, and poinsettias? Why not shop at Sid's Greenhouses? Come on. If you buy that poinsettia at a grocery store, you know what it's going to look like in a week. Don't put yourself through that again. This year, send a real florist-quality poinsettia from Sid's Greenhouses. They deliver throughout the entire Chicagoland area. Sid's also has gift baskets custom-made to order. So get your list of family, friends, and business associates together today. Call Sid's tomorrow. And sleep well, my friends. Sid's can also help with home party decorating. Fresh seasonal centerpieces will add a special touch to your holiday table. Plus, Sid's entire stock of decorations and ornaments is still up to 60% off this week. I actually talked to another, I got to tell you, I talked to a competitor. And, the competitor was saying, what are they, nuts? Everybody's going to go to Sid's. They got the 60% off. Hey, what can I tell you? They're my sponsor, They've got fresh-cut wreaths and garlands, trees, and they're in stock. And now we're talking eco-friendly holiday decorating. Visit SIDSonline.com to download the coupon to save $15 off your next purchase at SIDS. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook at Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. All right, now here's what I want you to do. Get the kids out of the room. If the kids are in the room right now, you got, because I'm going to play a little intro for, I think Rick will remember this from last year, because I played this last year. Rick DeMaio, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike.
Okay. You remember this from last year, and I didn't get any trouble for it, but Heather will appreciate this, too.
What is this, like Kathy and Judy's Sex Thursday or something?
No, it's almost as dangerous, okay?
Almost as dangerous.
Almost as dangerous, and it goes like this.
Santa Claus is a lie. He's a big, fat, red-faced lie. He's a roly-poly lie in a big red suit. He's a jolly old lie in big black boots. Oh, Santa Claus is a lie.
So, you know. That's,
I hope my son wasn't listening.
What,
I said, I hope my son wasn't listening.
He wouldn't get it anyway.
Yeah.
He's too young.
Yeah.
But, and for all you kids who are listening, that guy doesn't know what he's talking
that
about.
That singer's a liar.
That singer,
he's a liar about the lie. He
really,
is.
He just
oh,
doesn't.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
So we're trying to preserve something there, is that right?
No, not on my show. I am all about the truth, pal. And,
okay.
And is the truth really that come Wednesday we might be looking at significant snow?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is...
oh, I like when he says that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, I missed something there. What did I miss?
No, nothing.
Last week,
oh.
He missed.
Oh,
last,
oh,
week,
last week, yes. Yeah.
Last
oh,
week, I had difficulty week. Pulling up a forecast.
Okay.
One that
all
Mr.
I
Novak
ask,
wanted.
All I ask of a producer, I don't ask much. I ask she get here, I don't know, before the show starts.
That's good for a producer.
That's good
right?
for a producer to be here before the show starts.
Their job is to produce.
Produce the show. I ask her to, you know, if a phone call comes in, pick it up and say pleasantly, hi, the Mike Novak Show. Can I help you?
I do that well.
All right. That she handles that pretty well. And then the other thing is when my meteorologist is out of town visiting his family for, you know, for a holiday,
Which
she
I've done
come up,
many times before, by the way. I've done a lot of shows on the road.
You have done a lot of shows on the road, and I gave you a week off. I just say, get me a weather forecast. Do you know how hard it is for her to find a weather forecast?
It was not. You told me, see, he said, get me a weather forecast, and then he started whispering which ones he wanted, and I was having difficulty getting those specific ones.
Well, I asked her to go to the U.S., you know, National Weather Service first, and I figured, you know, how hard can that be? And you know what we ended up with, don't you?
No.
Skilling.
Oh, well, Tom's not bad. You know, you just gotta, you know,
he's
give
okay.
yourself a half hour to sit down and get yourself prepared to go through the 82 slides and
right.
on last show.
Hey. Well,
there's pressure and wind maps, and it's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I just think he has a problem with conglomerate radio and weather, Mr. Novak.
You know, see, now here's the producer complaining about the show host, and all the show host wanted was a forecast. So that's why, Rick, you are never taking another vacation, ever, from this show.
Well, when we do, Rick and I will just do it on the same day.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, so it'll happen on the same day, and you'll be...
Because I'll bet
you'll
Carl
be okay.
Krapek could come up with
I
a
bet
weather
forecast. I bet you he'll get you right into the National Weather Service with no problem.
I'll bet Jessica could come up with a forecast.
Jessica could read it. She's got a great voice.
Well, there you go.
Well, you know, Mike and Heather, it's funny because in the past when I've been away or on the road, I've done it up in Wisconsin, I've been on the road in Michigan, I think I was even in Ontario, Canada, and someplace in Rochester, New York. I've always been able to have access to the internet either wirelessly or, you know, stopping off in a motel on the way, but where my parents are in the mountains of the Poconos, they don't have internet access up there. There's a reason why they call it, you know, home sweet home. They want to get away from all that.
Yeah.
And literally there was, I mean, even cell phone coverage up there is very, very spotty. Now, granted, they do have a landline, but, I was away from the internet from Wednesday night even into Sunday, because the normal spot that I would go, which is a nice little wireless, a Wi-Fi cafe in Milford, which is about 10 miles away, was closed for the holidays. So, and then, otherwise I would usually go to the library, but I had nothing available to me for 3 days. And it was weird because, I mean, I didn't check email for 3 days and then check the weather for 3 days. It was like I was on some sort of a detox program, and it actually felt pretty good. And it was, I don't know, it was kind of nice to be able to to get away. So that was one of the reasons why you guys didn't have any updated information from your favorite meteorologist, Heather.
Right.
So I apologize.
Not your fault. It was actually happened. Quite funny. It spilled over to Facebook. It was dragged out for about 72 hours.
Right. It wasn't your fault, Rick. It was Heather.
Yeah.
So.
I got the man a forecast, though. I did.
And speaking
bottom
of forecasts...
we have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do. So I'll tell you what. We've teased people enough. Let's let them hang on for a couple of minutes, and we'll get right back to them. That's Rick DeMille. Forecast coming up in 60 seconds. The real winter weather is here. At least that's what we're going to hear. So now's the time to experience Christmas at the farm, Northwind Perennial Farm in Wisconsin. This special celebration of the season ends next Sunday, December 13th. So if you want a real holiday experience, see, they get in their Christmas early. They get that whole thing. So, you know, they get you before you're all tapped out on Christmas. If you want a real holiday experience, you need to head to Northwind Perennial Farm, just north of Lake Geneva and west of Burlington. They've transformed the century-old vintage dairy barn into a Christmas wonderland filled with fabulous ornaments, and gifts by local artists. There are holiday garden containers and spectacularly decorated fresh evergreen wreaths. And it's Wisconsin, after all. So the snow is on the ground. If it's not there now, oh boy, I think it's going to be by next week. And that gives you a chance to stand by the fire pit where you can warm your hands, explain to your kids how to properly roast a marshmallow, and look out over the spectacular scenery. If you feel like Christmas isn't special anymore, you have 1 week to make it special. Head up to Northwind Perennial Farm in Burlington, Wisconsin. It's an easy trip from Chicago and suburbs. For information and directions, 262-248-8229, or check them out on the web, northwindperennialfarm.com. Christmas at the farm. You will never forget it.
I'm Steve Austin, the new Santa Claus for the toy department. I can't see what I hired you. No belly, no beard. You need a total makeup job. I don't know whether or not you'll be convincing. The man in the office upstairs said to report to you.
Yes, I see.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the field we go, laughing all the way.
How's that for you? Another intro for you there, Rick DeMille.
I love it.
That's Pearl Bailey, actually.
I know. And what was the Steve Austin thing?
Oh, that was just a little... my buddy Steve Darnell puts together these CDs of wacky holiday music, and then he distributes them to his friends. And then sometimes he puts little tidbits of different odd holiday... I don't know, this and that. Like, for instance, all right, I got one for you right here that you'll kind of appreciate. Oops, hold on. Let's do it here. I've got all
work in progress, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's here.
It's live, folks.
This is live radio, and you don't know how many different window screens I have open here. Here we go.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This is Michael Jackson of the Jackson 5 wishing a happy holiday to all Motown fans.
Michael. When he was still Mikey.
He had many lives, didn't he?
He sure did.
He had many acts. I mean, it's like that was the...
I don't think he's dead. I just think the mothership came and brought him home.
It's quite possible.
Mm-hmm.
The word Elvis, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Him and Elvis and James Dean are all having a martini laughing at us.
Oh, and Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
And I guess...
Amelia Earhart.
And JFK. Yep. They're all in the same room.
I don't want to join him anytime soon. How about that?
Yeah, me neither.
So what's happening this week there, Rick?
All right, well, first off, let's start with the fact that it's a lovely morning in Chicago, right? A lot of sunshine out there right now. You know, if this was last week, Mike, if I recall, I was looking at the weather late Sunday afternoon, and you guys had, like, thunderstorms around the area on Sunday morning, didn't you, last week?
Something like that. I don't remember thunderstorms, but I remember it spritzing.
It was gray, sort of misty drizzle that never went away. It didn't burn off until the afternoon. Yeah.
Right, and then actually we had temperatures in the 40s on Monday, and then we finished it up with a 55-degree day on Tuesday, which was an amazing day. And that actually ended the string of 28 consecutive days above normal. And it's amazing because September, we had a month that acted like August. We had incredibly cool and wet weather in the month of October, which was pretty much like November. And then we had mild weather after a 6 degree below normal month in October. We had nearly 6 degrees above normal in the month of November. Everybody's thinking to themselves, okay, what the heck is December going to look like? And it looks like very much, pretty much like any other December in Chicago, which is starting out a little bit on the cold side and then snow. So basically, Mike, what's happening is there's a little bit of the system coming through late tonight into Monday morning. Now, the timing of this thing is still somewhat a little bit shifting around a little bit. One model says it's going to come through after midnight. Another one says sometime towards morning. My best guess is sometime at around 3 a.m. it's going to start to snow. So as nice as it is right now, we would love to have weather like this on a Monday morning. It's going to be a complete 180. So we're looking for, obviously, overcast skies developing throughout the day, light snow probably developing after about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't be surprised if you wake up tomorrow morning and you have to take one of those things out of the back of your car and brush the snow off your windshield. This will probably get about an inch, maybe an inch and a half of snow. Not a big deal, but again, Monday morning will be the first, quote, snow of the season for Chicago. I don't think they're going to do any plowing, but probably some salting and shoveling on some of the sidewalks and city streets is probably what we're going to end up doing. This system exits out of here very quickly by Monday afternoon. So much of tomorrow, kind of gray, kind of slushy temperatures, 32, 33 degrees. So whatever falls on the ground will probably melt fairly quickly. And then the next big storm comes in. But this one's going to be a big, big, big storm for a couple of different reasons. It's going to tap into a lot of Gulf moisture on the front side. It's going to be a very slow mover. And by the time it exits here by Wednesday morning, or I say by Wednesday afternoon, some places very close to Chicago could see up to 10 inches of snow. Now, the exact placement of that snow, I think, is going to depend on a couple of different things. First off, we'll probably get significant snow in here probably by midday Tuesday, but the problem with this storm system is it begins to move northward. So I do think, Mike, there's a really good chance that whatever snow falls on Tuesday afternoon is probably going to change over to sleet and maybe rain, and I wouldn't be surprised if from the city on southward it goes to all rain by Tuesday night, which is good. That's going to keep the roads somewhat wet. But then on the backside of the storm system is when the cold air locks in. And some of the stuff that I was looking at this morning suggests there could be a significant 8 to 12-inch band of snow across the northwestern suburbs up in the southeastern sections of Wisconsin by Wednesday morning. So bottom line is it's still a long ways away from figuring out exactly what's going to happen. If you don't like snow and you have to do a lot of traveling Tuesday and into Wednesday, this is not going to be good for you. If you're a snowplow operator, this is going to be excellent because you're going to be working for about 2 days. So a lot of people like when they, you know, they're basically trying to, you know, get their jollies in because that's what snowplow operators do. They like to plow snow. But still, there's a lot of questions. There's more questions right now than answers on the system because it's kind of coming through in three parts. But once we get into late Wednesday into Thursday, it is going to be very, very wintry around here. We're probably looking at 30 to 40 mile per hour winds. Temperatures probably only in the mid-20s for a high on Thursday. And then overnight lows Wednesday night into Thursday, even into Friday, probably down into the upper, lower teens and even in the upper single digits. So a very, very windy, wet, cold period for Tuesday, Wednesday, and even into early Thursday. So bottom line is if you have anything to do, any shopping to do, any outside yard work that you have to wrap up, any trees that you have to prune, any lights that you have to put up, definitely today is the day to do it. And maybe even tomorrow afternoon, because I think once the snow gets through this, I think we'll get into a relatively calm period of weather. But bottom line is enjoy as much as you can today's weather because it goes downhill pretty quickly after that, Mike.
Wow. It's a good thing we got the Care Trees guys here. They can talk about that because we'll talk about a couple of things with them after 9 o'clock, and one of them is putting the decorations up and how to do that safely. And the other is snow that accumulates on your trees and shrubs and how to deal with that. It sounds to me, Rick, the way you describe it, and like you say, the pieces of this puzzle are still coming together. Mm-hmm. You know, every time I not every time, but often, you know, you'll 3 days out, 5 days out, somebody will say, oh, look out, we're going to have 6 to 10 inches of snow. And then, of course, you get rain or something else. But one thing you can assure us, so there will be snow somewhere in the area.
Yeah.
It's likely somewhere it'll be heavy. Southern part might not get as much. But you can assure us that on the backside of this, it's just going to be cold and windy.
Oh yeah. And one thing to note is that this is going to be probably a very wet snow. So if you have any bushes, and I think the care of trees experts can address this, if you have any bushes that you haven't really, quote, pruned or winterized yet going into the winter season, probably today's the day to do it. Because from what I can see, once the snow begins to fall on Tuesday, it's going to be a very wet snow. And if we get the winds that I think we're going to get, which are probably about 30 to 40 miles per hour, the last thing you want is that heavy, wet snow, bending the branches, breaking them. And if we do get into a freeze situation, which we'll probably do Wednesday, that'll probably really put a stress on the branches. But it definitely looks like a very heavy, wet snow with a lot of cold air on the backside of this. So from a gardening standpoint, you have a lot of things to do today. If you want to put some Christmas decorations up outside, definitely I think today is the last day you want to do it, because even if we get into a calm period of weather after next Wednesday, then you're kind of traipsing through all that crusty snow, which is pretty much what's going to be around here during the day on Thursday and into Friday and Saturday.
Okay.
I hate trudging.
Hate crusty.
I don't mind cold as much as I mind the trudge through it.
Right. We'll have someone else trudge for you. How about that?
Yeah.
Rick DeMaio Weather, you can find it at DeMaioWeather.com, or you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and click on DeMaio Weather on the homepage there. Great having you back, buddy.
Okay, talk to you later, Mike.
You bet. Take care. Looking for the perfect holiday gift for the gardener in your life? You can't do any better than a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. This is the gardening magazine for our region, which means this part of the Midwest. In addition to the consistently excellent articles on everything from spectacular gardens you should know to plant and gardener profiles, there are regular features like Ask the Experts, What to Do in the Garden, Your Gardening Questions, Regional Reports, and the most comprehensive list of gardening-related events in the Midwest. Of course, you can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in your local store or garden center. More than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. But why make your friends leave the house to get the latest issue when they can have it delivered to their homes? There's even a guy named Mike who writes a column in the back of the magazine that is rumored to be pretty funny, but you can't believe everything you hear. You have to check it out yourself. Actually, let your loved ones and friends decide for themselves. Go online to ChicagolandGardening.com or give the office a call during business hours, 866-806-1498. Like I said, you can also go online, ChicagolandGardening.com. This year, give the gift of gardening.
Logan Square's Cafe Bella is all about wonderful food at highly affordable prices. There are Latin, French, and Italian influences in Chef Cesar Casas' decadent sandwiches and wraps, bruschetta and mango-fused guacamole, all served with great coffee. For the tilapia provençal or salmon filet, you may want to BYOB. Cafe Bella, 3311 West Fullerton, just east of Kimball. Go to cafebellaonline.com or call 773-292-5040. Cafe Bella. For gourmet, healthy eating.
Okay. You guys in the room, you're already here, so should I do my tip from the carrot trees?
Go for it.
Are you guys aware that winter is an excellent time to prune your trees?
I've heard that before.
Is it? Oh, yeah, me too. One of the reasons is that winter pruning can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt. Is that also true?
That is true.
And even an infestation of emerald ash borer. Why? Because the tree is dormant and less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects. Dormant pruning also helps protect your family and property from the potentially dangerous effects of wind shear, which may cause tree limbs to fall during a storm. In addition, pruning can also help reduce snow and ice damage to trees that are prone to this kind of damage. Birches, for instance, can be devastated by snow and ice if not pruned on a regular basis to improve their structure. Am I right so far?
You sound great.
I don't need you guys. Get out of here.
All right. See ya.
No. Stick around. Make the care of trees your permanent partner. in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists. We got a couple of them in. You both certified
yes.
arborists, okay, at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. You guys love both people and trees.
I think I like trees more often. They don't talk back as much.
Don't let your wife hear that, okay? That's Sean Kingzett, a buddy of mine. We've known each other for a number of years now. And Tom.
Yep.
Tom Kroc, and they're here to answer your tree questions, and we're going to talk about, did you hear Rick's forecast?
Snow?
Snow.
Yeah. That's all you got, you tree guys. It's like, snow, get ready. All right, get the boots. Well, and that's the other question I'll ask you, is that when you hear the forecast snow, and you hear the forecast backside of snow, icy, I imagine you already get ready the equipment that you're going to need for that.
Well, the ice and the wind is what we worry about.
Yeah, rather
snow
more
is
than,
good.
Yeah,
ice and it's usually more of a problem in the spring, to be quite honest. March ice storms, so that's when it gets windy and wet, and those two combinations are not good.
All right, so Sean and Tom are here, going to answer tree questions. We'll talk about the care of your trees as we head into winter and we head into our first real snowstorm of the season. Give us a call after 9. You can give us a call now and line it up, 773-838-WCPT, 773-838-9278, and we'll talk about trees after CNN News, which is at the top of the hour. We'll be back with the Mike Novak Show.
You're listening to WCPT's Self-Help Sundays. 4 hours of home improvement help for inside and outside your home. 820 WCPT AM Willow Spring. 92.7 WCPT FM Arlington Heights. 92.5 FM WCPY DeKalb. And 99.9 FM WCPQ Park Forest. Self-Help Sundays on WCPT AM and FM. Chicago's Progressive Talk.
One of the most brilliant scientists of our time had obviously lost his mind and had to be confined in a mental institution. Diagnosed a hopeless case. A hopeless case? Running loose on the streets of Washington. Great Krypton! I've got to get down there right now. This is a job for Superman.
So
welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Now here's the man who's greeting your world one corny joke at a time, Mike Novak.
Yeah. Nothing says Christmas like Tom Waits, right? And Heather loves Tom Waits, so I gotta do
it's a very that. Smooth voice.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of moving. All right, it's all time we have, folks. Good night, good night, everybody. We have already got our first question. By the way, this is the Tree Hour on the Mike Novak Show. I've got Tom Kroc and Sean Kingzett from the Care of Trees, and we're going to talk about some of what's going on this week and how you protect your trees. Give us a call if you're decorating. And maybe one of the other things we'll go into is something that I put up on my website last week, and I reprised it this week. It's how to find an eco-friendly Christmas tree and what constitutes an eco-friendly Christmas tree.
Neat. Cool.
Why not? Because there's a lot of different sides of that argument. But first, let's get to the question. Who was it? It was Bruce, did you say? Let's see. Pull that thing over there.
Yes, Bruce in Downers Grove called, and he couldn't stay on the line, but he asked, how many lights are safe on an indoor tree, like up to wattage? He says he's been arguing with his wife for it for over 40 years now. Each year they argue. He says no more than 1,000 watts. I think she wants more lights. That's what I assumed. And so this will help end a 40-something year marriage.
She wants to set that living room ablaze.
LEDs, that's the way to go.
Exactly, LEDs. But
it's hard to burn up the circuit with LEDs.
But Tom, you had an opinion during the break about this.
There's no real maximum or minimum to it. I mean, it's what looks good. If 3,200 lights go on a one circuit, a 15-amp circuit, but that'll blow a circuit if you put anything else on it. So you can put up to 3,200 lights on that.
On one circuit.
On one circuit, if it's a 15-amp circuit.
Up to 3,200 lights, did you say?
3,200 incandescent lights.
All right, now if we're talking LEDs.
32,000.
Lights?
On one 15
individual
amp.
Lights?
So if you have a 15-amp circuit outside, you know, a little box and for your outside lighting, and that's the only thing on that circuit, and it's 15 amps, with LEDs you can put 32,000 LED bulbs
lights
on it.
Hokey smoke, Bullwinkle. That's amazing.
Ten
I knew
times.
They were efficient, 32,000, but that sort of puts it in stark numbers. Now, here's the problem, of course, with LEDs right now. They're more expensive, although the price is coming down every year. But a lot of people have lights that they've had, you know, maybe not even that long. Maybe they bought them a couple of years ago, and they're incandescents, and they go, oh, what do I do with these incandescents? Do I just use them? And what's the green answer to that? Obviously, we want to lower our energy consumption. But let's say you've already bought it. Is the price of and the manufacturer of the new LEDs going to leave more of a footprint than just using the ones you already have? Or are you using more energy by using your two-year-old lights that are incandescents?
You're using more energy by using the incandescents. You're better off. Actually, some stores offer where you bring the incandescents in, they give you a discount on the LEDs. Certain stores are doing that. I don't know which ones. I mean, it was in the paper.
I missed that. Now, see, I'd love if you can find that, Heather. Trade-in type, I don't know, Google trade-in incandescent for LED Christmas lights or something. And if somebody knows, I'm going to give you a gift. All right? Call me at 773-838-9278. Being in the Christmas mood, in the holiday mood, I will give you something if you can help me figure out where that might be. Right away. You've got Christmas lights trade-in at the Home Depot.
Wow. There we go. That's one.
Wow. Because I've got some of those incandescents, you know, a couple of boxes have never been opened down there. I just, you know, never got around to it. Yeah. Pull that around, Heather.
And just real quick to answer more of Bruce's previous question about 1,000 watts and different lighting, you can also search Safe Christmas Lighting and get to Dr. Reddy's pediatric homepage where he gives you the breakdown on if you have other elements plugged into the same circuit in the room along with the tree and how to break it all down and do it safely.
Well, I guess did we actually answer Bruce's question?
I believe so, but since it was the 1,000 watt argument, I did find that they
say... It was that if we put 3,200 lights.
But if you've got the microwave on the same circuit.
And the table lamp and the television.
And the television.
Exactly, because the circuit is breaking up to all the electrical components within the room.
Given the way your house is set up, a newer house is probably going to be safer with the circuits, but you look at my house, I still don't know where all the circuits are attached.
What's tied,
Yeah,
you vacuum over there, and suddenly something goes out on the other side of the house.
Exactly.
Right?
You just think, and it's weird because there'll be the kitchen, you know, you hit the breaker, the kitchen lights go out, and then a closet down the hall light goes out, and you go, why are those attached to each other? Well, what's the deal here? So, yeah, you got to know your circuits, too. So Home Depot is one place that you can try. Now, how much of a discount do they give you? Let's see. It says between Okay. Well, is it just between November 5 and 15th? Is it done? All right, because that was written in November. It said between the 5th and the 15th.
Yeah, I don't know when it...
Not going to help anybody right now, if that's the case. All right, well...
Often take ours at the end of the season when, unfortunately, with the incandescents, we actually... It's so labor-intensive to take them out, and they're not reliable. We have to cut them out of the trees.
Then what do you do with them?
We take them to recycling places within the city.
And which recycling places will take them? Will the hazardous... I think the hazardous
We
waste
take it to
place.
The scrap type. Copper has been at such a premium that we actually take them to the scrap metal places, places that take, you know, just old scrap metal. You see the junkers on the Sundays where they stack up all this, you know, they go down
the
alleys.
But there's so much copper in the string of lights that I had no idea.
They actually take the copper back out.
It's worth getting rid of the plastic covering and
recycling it.
And
they take the copper out of it. So
that's amazing. Yeah, so... that's another thing.
So you take all your incandescents. Now, as an individual homeowner, you probably don't have enough old incandescents that you're going to get, you know, $30 or something.
But you guys do because you've got...
We got pounds and pounds,
pounds of
pounds
the
stuff.
Pounds and pounds. You're right. So what you do if you get your incandescent, you see one of in my neighborhood, you see one of those junk trucks going by, you throw it in the back of it.
When you leave the stuff out in your alley... For the person to pick up, you know, your junker in your neighborhood to pick the stuff up, then leave your incandescents in there. They'll take them to the recycling place.
Okay, online retailer HolidayLEDs.com offers a 15% discount for shoppers who send in their old strings to be recycled. Now, see, here's the problem with that. I know me. I'm not going to ever get around to it. Sending in the old one to someplace online. I'll shop online, but then packaging something and sending it. I mean, if most of us are lazy. I'm a lazy guy. I want to go someplace and drop it off.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I took some of my old incandescents over to the hazardous waste disposal on North Branch. That the city of Chicago runs. I'm pretty sure I did that last year, and they accepted them.
They take them, yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the places you can go, and that's you can go to cityofchicago.org/environment and find that. I think the link is on the homepage, cityofchicago.org. Now, Heather, of course, is going to Chicago Recycling Coalition, chicagorecycling.org.
They have to take them, no?
Chicago Recycling?
Yeah.
No. That's where our organization is an advocacy organization.
What's Ken Dunn's organization? He does some of that stuff.
That is, his is Chicago Resource Center.
Resource Center.
The Resource Center. But let's get, since we're on the idea of indoor trees, and by the way, Tom Kroc and Sean Kingzett from The Care of Trees, let's start with the indoor trees, and then we'll work our way outdoors. We talked about what kind of lights it can hold, and let's talk a little bit about what constitutes an eco-friendly tree. All right. First of all, if you're going to buy, a lot of people think eco-friendly is something that gets reused over and over again, which is true. Problem is, if you're buying an artificial tree, a lot of them have PVC in them, and that is not good. That, you know, some people just say no to PVC. There's a whole no to PVC movement because it's of its toxicity. Even some of the more friendlier materials will often have PVC for the joint area and to hold stuff together, you know. So that leaves you going to cutting down a tree or using a live tree. Now, a lot of folks say, "Well, I can't use a live tree because it's sequestering carbon, and we're cutting down something that." But the point is, with those trees, they're grown specifically to be harvested.
It's like a crop at that point,
right?
And don't consider it. And actually, I had a conversation with my little 11-year-old daughter about this, as she thought that was kind of wasteful. I'm like, "Well, it's like a crop. It's not. They don't go out into the woods." And, you know, destroy ecosystems with Christmas trees. It's land that's specifically designated, just like corn or soybeans or anything else, it's designated for Christmas trees.
Although I have to tell you, one of the most interesting things I ever did, and this was in my, really kind of my pre-eco days, back, I owned a vacation home out in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah.
out there for $5, for a $5 permit, they would let you go out into the National Forest and cut down a tree.
Really?
Honest to God. And now, obviously, you weren't going to cut down an old growth, but we cut down a Fraser fir that was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
But there we were, out on a mountainside. Nobody around.
Sounds like fun.
It was.
Wasn't Lost doing that too?
What?
Wasn't that just in the news that a couple got lost for 3 days in the wilderness and they went down?
Just trying to find their Christmas, the perfect Christmas tree.
That was me.
That, it was in the news. I'm gonna.
No, but it was fascinating though, because there we were and wandering around in the forest without supervision. With our little permit in our hand in case anybody stopped us, and then we put the tree on top of the car. I don't even remember that we had to show it to anybody.
Yeah.
And now I don't know if they do that anymore.
But does everyone in Seattle actually, you know, hop on the ferry and go out to the Olympic National Peninsula and harvest all the trees?
No.
Probably not.
No, I don't think so. I think they go to tree farms like we do in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Did you find it?
Yeah, it was in Oregon, too.
It was in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Okay. They went out, so they... find that story. We got to do something on that. Oh,
that's a marriage on the rocks
family,
right there.
Wait, what's the headline? It family. Lost family found alive after wilderness ordeal. A 3 hour tour.
How many Christmas trees do you suppose the missus passed up before they found the perfect tree?
Now it might have been the mister.
Might have been the mister. You're
might
right.
Have been the mister.
You're correct there.
A father and three children who vanished on a Christmas tree cutting trip in the Northern California mountains were found alive after huddling in a culvert for warmth during 3 days of heavy snow. I shouldn't be laughing. I'm just amazed how well they did, Lisa Sam said today after seeing her children and ex-husband for the first time. Did they get divorced during that 3 days? So it was like butterflies in my stomach. Let's see. California Highway Patrol helicopter crew spotted Frederick Dominguez atop a small bridge and landed nearby, sinking into 60 centimeters of snow. The family had taken shelter in a culvert beneath the bridge and stomped out the word help in the snow. And they don't even go into what tree they found. I haven't seen that yet. Oh, here we are. It's how they stayed alive. I want to know about the tree.
I want to know if it looks good.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of it. Maybe you guys can...
You can ID
of the Christmas tree?
There it is. All right. Can you... Tom, come around. Sure. You can probably ID that tree. What do we got there?
Oh, that's a Doug fir, I think.
Fir, yeah. Looks like a Douglas fir.
And there are a lot of them that grow out there.
Oh, yeah. Douglas firs are amazing.
Some are 300 feet tall.
That's the one I want in my living room.
Exactly. So, getting back to the tree farms, they are, like you said, a crop. Here's the problem. I mean, so we've established that cutting it down doesn't really take away in terms of the...
It depends what that land was used for before it became a Christmas tree farm.
Well, but it also depends on what... How long does it take a tree to get to, roughly, to get to like 5 or 6 feet tall?
Six to 10 years, somewhere in there is the cycle on a Christmas
tree
farm.
Okay, so what some people say is 6 to 10 years of what kinds of input, what kinds of fertilizers, what kinds of pesticides... Mm-hmm. What kind of fungicides, you know, the whole deal. And that's where we get into that gray area. Is it eco-friendly if somebody's been putting these pesticides and synthetic fertilizers on a tree for 6 years? How much is that? You know, how much does that add up to?
I think the good thing is economics help a little bit. That Christmas tree farmer wants to have a minimal input. They don't want to lose their crop. But they also want the least amount of money spent to grow that crop.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're not going to want to do those things. I mean, it's a tough question. I don't think there's an easy answer to it. I don't know that it is exactly 100% sustainable. But, you know, if you're looking at artificial versus, you know, what was that land going to be used for if it wasn't used for a Christmas tree farm, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. It's not the low-hanging fruit and the travesties in the world today.
Well, it isn't, but for those who are trying to be purists, they might go with an organic Christmas Tree Farm.
Organic Christmas Tree Farm. Or get a bald and burlap tree, use it as your Christmas tree, and then try to plant it.
That's true.
I've seen people do that, if you have enough space. You know,
but here's the problem with that. You got to plan ahead.
You do.
Dig the hole before the ground freezes.
In fact, you should be digging it right now because the ground's not completely frozen.
I've dug holes in January before. Not the funnest thing in the world, but I've been planting trees in January. But I'm an odd person, so that
And you're a professional.
I'm a professional hole digger in January?
That's right. Kids, don't try this at home. If you want to do your bald and burlap, just one of the things you need to pay attention to. If you're planning ahead and you know you're going to do this, that you want to buy a live tree, you want to... But here's another problem with that, as you know. If you bring the live tree indoors, you're taking it out of dormancy, and then you're putting it out.
There's risk. It might not make it.
So it's not always the best thing. Probably the best thing, if you want to do a live tree, is put it in a cold room.
Yes.
I would think. And decorate it with lights. So let's say you get a live tree and you want the Christmas decoration. So you put it on your unheated porch. And then you've already dug the hole outside in November or when it was warm in December, and you might actually have covered the hole with something but it's still probably freeze. But at least then when you put the tree in, you've got the hole ready, and then you just take the tree out.
What you do is you save on your gas bill as well, and you just turn your heat down to 50.
Well, it's like that in my house, but I'm not sure everybody wants. Or you go to Ben's Fraser Fir Farm. Is it Capron, Illinois, or Capron? I don't know. But that's an organic Christmas tree farm. That site is on mine. And Pioneer Tree Farm in McHenry. And they are organically grown Christmas trees. Or you can ask what kind of methods they use. They use IPM, Integrated Pest Management.
Yeah.
I would hope that the Christmas tree growers would be interested in that kind of thing and, put as few chemicals into the ground as possible. That's Sean King Zed and Tom Crock from the Care of Trees. We are discussing Christmas trees right now, but we're going to move on to outdoors. The other thing I was going to say about the indoor trees, some folks say, I don't like the mess. I'm thinking, how much of a weenie are you? I mean, how big could you possibly be a bigger weenie than to say, oh, that mess? It's not like the needles migrate all over the house, although some do.
Water it.
And if you don't
keep
water
the thing watered.
If you keep the thing hydrated, you do it right in the first place, you're not going to have that. So, I don't know. Am I being a little harsh?
Well, how long does a tree last being watered? Like,
that's a good question. How long, if you do it properly, and let's explain how we hydrate a tree properly that has been cut to go into your living room. Anybody?
Cut the bottom 3-4 inches off the stump, get it in water right away, and just keep watering it daily.
It's like roses. Actually, at the beginning, it's like roses. That first time, if you let it go dry, then it's done. Once it goes dry, it won't take up any more water after that. So you have to keep the water in there for those first few days.
Well, here's the problem. You go to one of those outdoor Christmas tree places, how long have those trees been sitting there? And are they?
If it's been cold like it has been lately, it should be pretty good if you cut it open like that.
If you can, try not to have it cut at the place you're buying it from. Wait until you get the thing at home,
mm-hmm.
and then use a handsaw or something and cut it right before you bring it in. So that,
because it can make that big a difference, even taking 20 minutes to get home.
Yeah,
right.
It's just like cutting flowers. They always take it up better if you put them in water as soon as after cutting as possible.
Okay. And then the other thing, of course, are all the goofy things that people want to put in, like soda into the water and...
Baking soda?
Not baking. No, I guess like,
tonic water.
Like
Sprite.
Yeah, really?
Sprite.
Helps them take it up? Like sugar?
Yeah, sugar.
Okay.
And what's the story on that, of course? That's not... something that really does any good, right?
I don't know.
That's what I've heard. All right, you guys. Okay, I'll tell you then.
I think pure water.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I've seen. Is that basically it's just water.
It's not going to start growing.
No, you don't have to worry about that. Go ahead, Heather.
Are there ways to like tell when you're in an outdoor tree shop, if you will, like if the tree's gone dry? or if it's, you know, if you're getting a good value for being sort of...
I can tell you the tree is dead.
Right. Well, is it, well, like, again, well, I know nothing about trees. My mother once bought a spray-painted green one and brought it home, and all the needles fell off and had been dead for God knows how long. And so,
you could look at growth and leaf and needle color and to help determine if there's a lot of brown or browning needles or if it's already starting to change color. That one might have been struggling at the tree farm.
They tell you to shake them, but a lot of these places have them in these nets.
Yeah.
So how can you shake a tree if it's in a net?
You stick your face in it. That's how you do it. A good, healthy evergreen, the needles are a little softer. That's how you know. If you stick your face in it and it hurts, then you know you got a healthy evergreen tree.
This is the Care Tree scientific method. Stick your face in the tree.
I love it.
Okay.
No, but it's like a healthy looking plant. You feel the needles and you look at it and you're like, okay, that looks like a healthy plant. It feels firm and.
Is a strong aroma sign of a healthy tree?
Like, I don't know, but I like bringing it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean that's the whole thing is you want that Christmas tree smell if you bring it in to the house.
And unless you're allergic. My dad is allergic to the smell of fur, so...
What?
Yeah, so he...
I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, I don't know. My dad's allergic to fur.
He's allergic... Oh, you and not the kind that the PETA people
furs.
Would go...
Yeah.
Okay. Sean Kingzett from the Care Trees. Tom Kroc is here as well. We're going to get into the whole thing about how to protect your tree outdoors and how to light a tree outdoors. Let's do that next. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And if you want to ask a question, give us a call, 773-838-9278.
Attention teachers! Want your class to really engage in American history? OneHistory.org has presentations that make history come alive. A 10-year-old Civil War powder monkey. A Depression-era 7-year-old pushing a horse plow. A group of teenage girls facing off against Southern bigots in the Civil Rights Movement. We know how to reach your students. Whether it's for a history class or providing a context for American literature, our presentations get to the heart of history. OneHistory.org. The truth is in the details. Check out our website, www.onehistory.org. That's www.onehistory.org. Or call us at 216-956-6300. 216-956-6300.
It's the holiday season, and we're checking off the list, checking it twice, actually. Gifts, home and party decor, poinsettias, you know, green stuff. Where should you go? Why not shop at a place that specializes in things like gifts, home party decor, and poinsettias, and green stuff? Why not shop at Sid's Greenhouses? Come on, if you buy that poinsettia at a grocery store, you know what it's going to look like in a week. Don't put yourself through that again. This year, send a real florist-quality poinsettia from Sid's Greenhouses. They deliver throughout the entire Chicagoland area. Sid's also has gift baskets custom-made to order. So get your list of family, friends, and business associates together today. Call Sid's tomorrow. And you're done. Sid's can also help with home party decorating. Fresh seasonal centerpieces will add a special touch to your holiday table. Plus, Sid's entire stock of decorations and ornaments is still up to 60% off this week. The fresh-cut trees, wreaths, and garlands are in stock as well. Now we're talking eco-friendly holiday decorating. Visit SidsOnline.com to download the coupon to save $15 off your next purchase at Sid's. SIDS is Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and they're located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Hello, everybody. We're Fleming and John.
Hello.
And we want to sing for you this evening one of our all-time favorite holiday classics. Beautiful sight, we're happy tonight.
the Mike Nowak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Phone calls coming in, Heather! Hello!
Heather,
hello.
Where are you?
Hello?
Hi! Somebody's on the line there.
Yes.
Huh? And you are?
I am Nell Ryan, and we, for many years, cut our own trees. In fact, we did it one year, the first year after we had tried to burn our old Christmas tree in the fireplace and damaged the mantle because of the way it went up. And after that, we went out and cut trees every year. And we did what your friend recommends, which is, you know, keep it wet. Cut it before you put it in the stand. And we had a big stand that had lots of water. And I used to keep it up for as long as the kids enjoyed it and my husband would tolerate it. And that was usually about 4 weeks.
4 weeks is about as good as I do. About week number five, it's just not taking up any water anymore.
Yeah, yeah, but it was fine up until then. And then we couldn't even, you know, it was very difficult to even break the branches or, you know, do anything with it because it was still fresh enough that, you know.
Yeah.
And it was certainly safe. In fact, it was so safe that our pet squirrel thought it was a real tree.
Wait, you have a
you had a pet squirrel.
And the dog went after the squirrel in the middle of the night.
Wait.
Those are Christmas memories right there.
Yeah. You have a pet squirrel in the house?
We did have. I was teaching science, and of course science teachers know everything, right? So somebody brought
No, arborists know everything.
Anyway, one of my pupils brought me this poor baby squirrel that had apparently fallen out of the tree and had been sitting on the sidewalk frozen in this position, which he stayed in for over, you know, 12 hours. I thought he was going to die. But we finally, you know, feeding him with a doll bottle and stuff like that, we got him to go along. And then he didn't, you know, he wasn't ready to go outside. So he was in our house, yeah.
And he didn't revert and, like, attack you in the night
and no.
Something like that?
No, in fact, one time he did get outside and he ran away, and it was the springtime. And the kids were, his peanut is gone. And, you know, I know he's back where he should be. He's with his friends, blah, blah, blah.
In heaven.
And the trees were beginning to leaf out, and they could see. They said, oh, we saw peanut over here. We saw peanut over there.
They probably saw peanut for like 10 years, right?
Well, no, about 3 days after he left, I came to the back door to come into the house. And he zipped out of the bushes that I had right there and dashed into the house as soon as I opened the door. And he ran upstairs, and he had one of the boys was his favorite. So he ran upstairs, and he jumped into Mark's bed and stayed there. And he drank, but one of the things he did was he drank lots and lots of water. He could not find water.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us that he'd gotten into the liquor cabinet.
No, he wasn't quite that good. He was pretty good about a lot of things. He had very good taste.
Not a good drinker, huh?
No, not a good drinker. He had very good taste in wood, though, because he attacked some of my mahogany.
Now, you got to take me back to, before I let you go now, and I am going to give you a prize just for calling, because for regaling us with stories of Peanut the pet squirrel. What was this you did? You had a tree go up in flames or something in the house? Or?
Oh, one year, you know, as we were taking down the ornaments and, you know, the needles were falling all over the place, and we just thought, well, you know, we've got all this. Why don't we just, instead of, you know, lugging it out, why don't we just, you know, put it in the fireplace?
Yeah,
so
you should not.
We put it in the fireplace. And, no, it's the wrong thing to do. But that made us really understand why, you know, dead trees like that can be very...
Let's explain why you don't put a Christmas tree in a fireplace.
Because it went...
Oh, I already saw, right? Yeah.
This was one branch, right? It just went whoosh.
And I was going to actually have our arborist explain that now, and what would be the scientific reason that...
Well, I think there's a chemical in the evergreen trees. I think it's called creosote, and it clogs the flue, and it really... makes your chimney quite dirty, and it's not. I don't think it's very safe to burn evergreens.
Well, it's not very safe to burn because they burn so rapidly.
And they burn so hot.
Yeah.
They burn hot and they burn rapidly because of the chemicals in the sap.
Well, Nell, where do you live?
Clarendon Hills.
Okay. Well, I'm going to send you. Are you a gardener?
Oh yeah.
All right, I'm going to send you a book, and I don't even know what it is because I got.
That sounds like a great gift. I got a book. I don't know what it is.
Well, I've got a stack of them next door in the Heather's going to run to the closet here and get. I'm just going to what?
Yeah, I want to make another comment about burning the tree.
Go ahead.
You know, when you talk about sustainable or, you know, carbon sequestration, you shouldn't burn them. You should mulch them instead.
Yeah.
Because then, so if that carbon is fixed for the 6-7 years that tree is at the tree farm, now you mulch that uh-huh. carbon stays sequestered, uh-huh. And it's mulch. You know, mulch is a great way to keep carbon out of the atmosphere and in the soil.
That's an excellent point.
That's a little side comment.
Yeah, actually, that's what I have done, you know, after that when we had, because when we took the fresh trees down, they didn't even have any needles coming off. I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And they do make great, but you know what they do? They make great winter cover.
Yeah, I cut my branches off, and I'll put them in my garden.
Yeah.
I'll just lay those green branches out in the garden.
I've been
for the
known
rest
to go searching in alleyways
for
Christmas trees, and then I bring them into the yard, cut the branches, and throw them on my garden, especially if...
Tulip bulbs, for some reason, like the acidity of it, the tulip bulbs.
The tulips really like that? That's great.
Oh, that's good to know.
All right, I've got several books here. One is I've got some kids' books... from my friend Tim Magner, who was on the show the other day, an environmental guide from A to Z, or N is for Nature. I don't know if you have any kids or grandkids.
N is for Nature. I've seen that book, and it's terrific.
She's a science teacher.
Yeah.
She knows everything.
Well, I'm not anymore, but I still am, you know.
But this is the one for the young kids, like, what is it, 3 to 6 or something like that?
Uh-huh.
Is that the one you want?
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. And then I've got, I'm going to send you one of these. You tell me, The Encyclopedia of Dahlias, All About Houseplants, The Encyclopedia of Aquarium Plants, Growing Roses in Cold Climates, or Roses for Dummies. I've got all of those. You pick one of those.
Let's see. What the encyclopedias one was?
The one was of dahlias, and the other is of aquarium plants.
And then after that was
the...
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I went very fast. Growing Roses in Cold Climates or All About Houseplants?
All About Houseplants.
You got it. So you're going to get N is for Nature from... and it's autographed by Tim. He autographed this. So,
that's a wonderful book.
I'm glad you've seen it.
Yeah.
That's very cool. What are we, still got a tag in there? Oh, my goodness, I got a plant tag in the book. That's all right. So you hang on, and you can talk to Heather, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you, and I really enjoy your show and get a lot out of it.
I appreciate that. Thank you for calling. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We've got another expert on the line. We'll go to line 2, Dan Costa. How are you, Dan?
Hello, Mike.
So you decided to call my show instead of Mighty House this week, huh?
Yeah, well, this time I have a suggestion instead of a question. And I'm being a person who hates painting, and they had the paint person on last week, so I needed some advice there. But, you know, at the greenhouse, we sell a lot of cut branches and wreaths and roping. And
that's at Vern Goer's in Hinsdale?
Right. And a lot of people, they come in, especially earlier, and they're looking to put the stuff in the house, you know, put the scatter boughs on the mantelpiece above the fireplace or put roping along the sides of the fireplace. And just kind of like that lady was just talking about, you know, really, I recommend no more than 10 days indoors because those cut branches dry out really fast. And that's a real fire hazard to be putting that stuff around the fireplace.
Tom Croc is nodding. Tom, have you had some experience with that too, or just
I've seen people put it around the chandeliers in their house and light a candle underneath it, and you mm-hmm. for their dinner, and all of a sudden the chandelier catches fire. So
goodness.
They dry out.
Oh,
real
yikes.
Quick.
So that's different from a tree because the tree, at least you're putting in water, but the branches are not usually.
Right. There's no way to keep those wet.
Yeah.
Being so warm and dry inside, eventually those needles, all that water.
Now, I hadn't thought about that, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I talked the lady last year out of the idea of putting some roping into a chandelier type thing like that where she was going to have candles. This is, you're going to burn your house down.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I would think you might.
Yeah.
And you said you had a question, Dan?
No, I had a question last week for those other guys.
Oh, that was it. So this was your contribution to my show, which is cut branches,
start fires.
Cut branches, start fires. Yeah, be very careful.
No more than 10 days indoors. If people want to get that stuff early, it's okay to get it early. You know, just keep it outside. And like the day before your party, bring it in, put it where you want it, you know, enjoy it for for that time, and then get it back out. You don't want to be leaving that stuff laying in the house, you know. It's a fire problem.
That makes really good sense. All right, Dan Costa, Vern Goers, give us the address.
We're 5620.
You do remember. You do work
where
there, right?
Yeah. Where am I?
5620 South Oak Street in Hinsdale.
And you got the green stuff going now, too, right?
Very little left. We've had quite a season.
Really?
Yeah, everybody was buying like mad this year, and the wholesalers are running out of stuff. We're getting whatever we can get to bring in.
That's really kind of interesting. I hadn't. Well, good. I'm glad. I'm glad you guys are doing well. That's great.
I think it's the economy changing this year.
I sure hope so. All right. Thanks a lot, Dan. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I've got certified arborists in the room, Sean Kingzett and
Tom.
Tom. I was saying, I had the last name, and I'm like, Tom, with a T-H, right?
Yeah.
T-H-O-M, Croc. And Heather reminds me that Kathleen's got photos up on the homepage from our soiree last night. With Stephanie Miller and Bill Press, pictures of me with Dick Kay and them, and one with Stephanie Miller, who's, you know, just pounding wine. Just pounding wine. And but that's why she snuggled up to me, because at that point, she didn't know any better. And then me and Ron Cowgill, who dressed for the occasion, and he had his tool belt on, so and he's in here at 10 o'clock with Joe Builder and Mighty House. All right, outdoor lights. What's the biggest mistake folks make when putting lights on an outdoor tree?
Too many in a row. They plug them all in and expect it to keep lighting, and they burn out half the system.
Too many strings
in one row.
In one strand.
Yeah.
And you gotta break them up.
And is that LEDs or is that incandescents?
LEDs and incandescents.
Well, how many can you do?
It depends on the the lights. We usually do about 300 incandescents in a row, and you can do about 600 LEDs in a row. That's just the average.
And how many are on a string usually, though?
So you can do three incandescent strands, which is still the typical. You'd have three strands in a row.
Three hundred
in a row.
Okay.
End to end.
End to end.
And then you have to what we call split them. You have to have another.
Why is that? Because they just can't. The strands just can't handle the load.
Can't handle that much power.
All right,
going
so let's
it.
Say you've got the cord coming out to the light, and it you've got multiple outlets on the cord. Then you could plug a second strand into that, right?
Right.
Just as long as it's not plugged into the strand,
the far end of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What mistakes do people make in terms of the way they harm their trees in doing this?
It's better to do it when it's a little bit warmer, if you can. So don't wait till a crisp December day to do your lights. Put them up while it's warmer in October, November, while the branches are still more pliable.
Can I go back in time and do that?
Sure,
right now?
Why not?
I would really like to do that. Can I go back to last week, just last summer, Sunday? Well, actually, that's what Rick DeMille was talking about earlier. If you didn't catch Rick DeMille's forecast, it's going to snow by Wednesday, depending on where you are in the area. You might get up to 6 or 10 inches of snow. You might just get rain, but the backside of it is what worries you guys, because then it gets cold and windy, especially if you got the
lights hanging on there.
Lights hanging on there, or just tree branches that get covered with ice. He didn't say anything like an ice storm, but these are the kinds of things that you worry about, but especially when you're dealing with the lights.
You're hanging the lights up, you're trying to get the wires through there, you can break and rip branches off, you know, more slender branches usually, but you can damage your tree while installing or taking down your lights. So you need to be cautious not to hurt your tree.
So what are the tips for doing this right for the best show? Which I would imagine the more lights the better. But how do they get the effect where it looks like the whole branch is just lit
up? That's called branch wrapping.
Yeah, and it's really
arborists were smart. So when it goes out the branch, we call it branch wrapping.
Branch wrapping. Now, how do you know which branches? I mean, you're not going to wrap every single branch on a tree.
I think that's where the artist part comes out.
Okay.
And that's the part of the lighting that I enjoy the most, actually, is that you feel like you're a little bit of an artist, even if you're not.
A tree has a certain shape, but you can only follow so many branches,
mm-hmm.
so you got to follow the right branch that makes it look artistic.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you got to step back every so often, look at it, and you know, squint your eyes to see where the lights are on it if it's bright day out.
Well, what happens when you get to the end of the branch and now you want to go to another branch, but you've got the string of lights that, and you don't want to see where... You know how that... All right, give the microphone to Heather.
I am crazy anal retentive about my Christmas lights on my tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I start at the trunk, and I wrap it around the branch. And then when you get to the end of the branch on the outside, you have to wrap it back around said branch.
If you're doing branch wrapping.
Right, and then go to the next one so your cords don't show or stick out. That's how you have to do it.
Is that
very tedious and time-consuming.
I know,
beautiful,
that's the thing,
done.
The whole branch wrapping thing.
And that's where the splitters and the cords work, is you kind of have to have a sense of how many lights. Like, if you have a small crabapple, or help me with this one, Tom, or like a service berry, what would you put, maybe 400, 500?
400 to 600, somewhere in there.
Branch wrapped.
Small, yeah.
If it's a smaller ornamental tree, if you're doing the branch wrapping, let's say it's a tree that has graceful architecture, has nice stems, and the branch wrapping makes more sense, you might put 400 to 500.
On one tree?
All
right,
So if you're going to branch wrap, you kind of have to imagine, all right, I'm going to split my lights up. I'm going to send, you know, 150 this way and 150 this way. And then, like Heather said, once you get to the end, if you still have lights left over, don't jog it over to another stem. Just run it back down the same stem.
Yeah. All right. So, see, I can never plan that. That's my deal.
It's balance.
Her record is 9 hours putting lights on a tree.
Okay.
It's balance. Balance is what makes it look good, though. Is when you get done to a certain point, you've got so many left over, you balance it out the other way.
Okay.
So the one side doesn't look like it has more lights than the
right.
other side.
Now, you guys, when you do this, as you said, it's really more cost effective to just cut the lights.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. For you. Yeah.
Yeah, which, because those incandescents,
but the average,
if we put those same strand of incandescents up the next year, they might not work.
Well, let me ask you something. Why are you using incandescents?
We are trying to get as many of our clients to switch over to LEDs as possible.
So when you come in, do you supply the lights? You supply the lights too.
Correct.
But so since they're cheaper, a lot of your clients are probably saying, I want incandescents.
Well, it's a little bit hard, but you can try to get the cost savings back because the LEDs can last longer. They can last for 3 years instead of 1 year. So if you can
not
reuse
if you cut
that strand, well, we don't cut the LEDs off.
Yeah, you save the LEDs.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
So there's more labor to take the lights down with the LEDs, but we get to reuse that material for 2-3 years in a row after that. We basically just store them, knowing that those lights will have a longer lifespan.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, if they want to buy the LEDs, what's the point if you're cutting them
we
down?
We don't cut LEDs.
We
no,
save
off.
The LEDs.
Okay. All right. And when you take down obviously it's just a matter of being careful, right?
Correct. It's the same story.
I was talking to one of one of the people from the care trees just the other day who was saying, he was talking about a job that somebody had, and they had hired somebody else to put the lights up, but then the care trees to take them down.
To save the trees, to protect the tree.
To protect the tree.
Yeah, because they knew that.
And his job, he kept going to the client going, just hire us to do the whole thing. I mean, why would you hire one company to put them up and then a second company to take them down when we can just do the whole thing and we'll protect your tree while we're putting them up in the first place?
Actually, we'll often prune trees. If there's a large tree, it's not a bad idea to have it pruned and then put the lights in. So that it's a healthier,
well, that would make
structurally
sense too. Yeah,
better
so you're
tree.
Doing both at the same time. Now,
mm-hmm.
do you give a good rate? I mean, do you
there can be ways to set it up to save a few dollars because the same people, it takes a certain amount of money just to get people to your home. So if we're not making two trips, yes, we can it can be a little less expensive that way.
What about evergreens in terms of decorating? They must be a little easier than deciduous because you're not going to branch wrap for one thing. Right.
No, that's canopy wrap. I mean, it goes all on the outside of those, but you still push it in about a foot into the green on
uh-huh.
some of them.
So it has some sort of depth.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Let me take a quick break, and before we wrap up, I want to give folks some tips on what they should do with snow and protecting their trees and ice and that kind of thing. That's Sean Kingzett and Tom Kroc. I know their names. they're from the Cara Trees You know, I was going to do the Caratrice commercial here, but this whole hour has been kind of that. So let me just let you know that if you want these guys, and they know their stuff, they're certified arborists, and that's kind of the key to the whole thing. You don't want to fly by night. You don't want the people who are going to, they say they'll mow your lawn and prune your trees. Get their license. Take a look at see if they're certified arborists and know what they're doing. And if you call the Caratrees, it's 847-394-4220. You can also go online to thecareoftrees.com, just the way it sounds, thecareoftrees.com. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Cafe Bella is Logan Square's newest great restaurant. High-end chef Cesar Casas, formerly of Ambria, prepares fresh, wholesome, but decadently delicious food. From the pulled pork sandwich for lunch to the tilapia provençal for dinner, the atmosphere is relaxed. There's free Wi-Fi, BYOB. Cafe Bella, 3311 West Fullerton, just east of Kimball. Go to cafebellaonline.com or call 773-292-5040. Cafe Bella, for gourmet, healthy eating.
And I hope you do stop by Cafe Bella. You know, it sounds, that's in my neighborhood, by the way. I know you.
Is it good?
It is very good. And I know you go to Paco's Tacos down the block here.
Sometimes. I've been known to go there before.
I know. The Caratrees guys, that's their hangout here on the south side.
I'm a fan of Zaca Tacos myself.
See, Heather likes the Zaca Tacos experience, and you're the Paco's Tacos.
Yeah.
So, in my neighborhood, it's Cafe Bella on Fullerton, just east of Kimball. And really nice people, very friendly. My favorite thing, Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi. So you go and sit in there for, I don't know, 16, 18 hours and just keep eating. Since 1997, WRD Environmental has been creating healthy, sustainable landscapes that are both beautiful and responsible to future generations. You could say WRD is in the business of transformation. Sometimes it's through projects like the Lincoln Park South Pond, for which WRD is part of a team that is turning the zoo's popular pond into a model for sustainable landscape solutions, habitat restoration, and environmental learning. Other times, it's through leadership in organizations like the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, or MELA. Sean and I have both been on the board of that at one time or another. I don't miss going to board meetings, do you?
Oh, we had a lot of fun. Are you kidding?
Yeah, you know, it's like one of the things we found out about board meetings is that they're proportional to the amount of wine that is brought to the meeting. And those are
symposiums. If we had wine there, it wasn't a board meeting.
That's
it was
right.
A symposium.
But MELA is working to green up the landscape industry so that sustainable design materials and methods are the professional standard. Sometimes the transformations are of people themselves. WRD is a partner with the Chicago Department of the Environment in managing Green Core Chicago, which provides job training in the green industry, electronics recycling, and home weatherization. For innovative, sustainable transformations, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology and online at WRDEnvironmental.com.
There is frost on the window, there is snow on the grass. May the Yule spirit warm you as it has in the past. Let me shout, welcome to you, hooray, hallelujah, 'cause Christmas is coming at last.
Aww. Heather's so good on the organ.
Yes, she is. I didn't even know she was taking lessons. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm so glad you're listening on this Sunday morning. I've got my professional arborists from the Care of Trees in the studio, Tom Kroc and Sean King-Zett. Rick DeMaio was talking about cold weather coming. What do people need to think about if we're going to have a heavy snowfall and they've got probably deciduous trees, that's not a problem so much, but evergreens?
The arborvitaes, the junipers.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. If they're too close to the edge of the house, they'll catch the snow. If a lot of it, unfortunately, is preventative, not reactive. Once the snow has fallen and is pulling the thing over or breaking off branches, there's not as much we can do.
Well, also, if an arborvitae or a different kind of plant, sometimes they'll split. Or just not even split so much as that, like physically, you know.
No, they'll split. They'll be multiple stems.
Yeah.
So that's why prevention can help a lot. If you buy a single, if you're buying arborvitaes or junipers, try to make sure they're single stem, meaning that if you look in the middle of the plant, there's only one woody branch and it has smaller branches attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
If there's multiple stems, the snow and ice can grab one stem and rip it and pull it away from the rest of the plant. So now it pulls it away and now it either breaks or you got this big hole and your arborvitae doesn't look as nice. And sometimes you have to just outright remove them because sometimes it'll actually pull them out of the ground. You know, it won't just pull one stem, it'll actually pull the root system out of the ground.
I've seen that happen also with boxwoods. Boxwoods is tough because you don't usually get a single stem. You've got multiple stems. And if you get too much snow, it'll separate it and sometimes actually break off a branch or something, and now you've got a hole. The thing with boxwood, though, it'll grow back. But they're so slow.
Yeah,
it might take years before it fills in. With an arborvitae, they've got...
They don't fill in very fast.
No, they don't.
So there's ways we can prune them. We actually we do a lot of pantyhose work. We actually will...
I beg your pardon?
Yes.
Tie them up.
You know what?
We tie them up. We actually will tie the stems together so that
I'm
the snow
listening.
And ice...
I'm not listening!
The pantyhose material doesn't bite into the stem, and you can use... It's knee-highs.
Rich,
bubble knee-highs.
Rich Air at Rich's Fox Willow Pine says the pantyhose is the tree keeper's best friend.
Because
this is also called nylon.
Nylon.
That's
the material. I guess more accurately.
I like pantyhose. I don't want to call it. I just want to say the word panty. Okay.
I think I like amusing the person at Walgreens when I'm buying like 50 bubbles of the knee highs, and they're like looking at me like, "What is this man doing?" I think that's
the weird thing. You think because arborists use this so much, they would have a special.
There is. There's arbor tie.
Oh, there is
okay. Materials.
So you don't actually have to go to.
Yeah, maybe I just like
Walgreens.
Buying pantyhose.
Just,
I don't know.
He just wants to show off in the market.
The arbor tie is a little thicker. I like the text. It's a thinner material. So for finer plants.
So you will tie some branches together in anticipation of a heavy snow or ice storm or something.
Yeah, in the fall. You know, usually in the fall time. Now some people they don't want that attached to their. All season long, so we put it up in the fall and take it down in the spring.
What about covering, and we only got like a minute here, what about covering with burlap or something like that?
If you've gotten a windy exposed site or something next to road salt, you know, where they're going to burn, the edges of the needles are going to get desiccated and burn from the wind, then staking up burlap to protect them from the wind is a good idea. And anti-desiccants, that's another option.
Yeah, and that's the other point I was going to make, that you can actually buy products that you can put on. And what are the evergreens that you should not put anti-desiccants on? There's
blue spruce.
Blue spruce, probably more not so much for their health, just for the color. The oils and the anti-desiccants will change the color of your blue spruce.
So
your
blue color. It won't be blue anymore.
It'll be green.
It'll be... what are you going to do with a
green...
Oh, gee. And then they work so hard to get it blue in the first place. That's Sean Kingzett, Tom Kroc. Thank you, guys,
Thank
for
you.
Coming down and
good to
and,
see you, Mike.
Talking about trees. Again, you can always give them a call at the Care of Trees. You can go online to thecareoftrees.com, or that phone number, again, is 847-394-4220. That wraps it up today for the Mike Novak Show. Look at them. They're hovering outside. Have you seen your picture on a line around Cargill? I'll show it to you when you get in here. Mighty House is next. Ron and Joe Builder are standing by to answer your questions, and I will see you next week on the Mike Novak Show.